There was a true story of a Kirov rabbi, an outreach rabbi in Israel in Ashkelon. I think this took place in 2008. That's when it happened, 2008. So he was driving through Ashkelon, and there was a air raid siren. There was a siren, so he quickly swerved and drove in a different direction. And as he was swerved over to the side of the road, there was a couple walking with a dog, a non-religious couple walking with a dog. And he kind of tried to avoid them. They were okay, but the dog got hit. The dog got hit, and he killed the dog, right? So, you know, it was a very upsetting thing for the I was going to say the parents of the dog, for the owners of the dog. But after this, after everything settled down, so the rabbi himself was extremely apologetic. He felt very, very bad. He wanted to compensate. He wanted to do whatever he could do. And he was really going out of his way tremendously to do whatever he could to compensate and to do whatever he could to make them feel better. And they were very impressed by his just decency and his willingness to try to help out. And they struck up a relationship. They struck up a relationship. And this, again, is a non-religious couple. And the rabbi, being an outreach rabbi, so he made friends with them, and he started, talking to them about Judaism. And one thing led to another, and they were taking classes with him. He was going to their home in Ashkelon and giving classes regularly. And then they brought their friends as well, and a regular shiur started. And in the course of time, it really developed into a real kind of bona fide little kind of base medrash, and even they decided to dedicate a large room inside their house to the base medrash and shul of this community. And they became religious. This couple became religious all because of this dog. And there was a shul. There was a room inside the house which they dedicated. And this became like a community room for the whole community to come there to learn a base medrash and a shul. And they put a plaque on the room. And they named it, right, the name of the shul, Base, and the name of the dog was Igor, right? Base Igor, right? That was the name of the shul, Base Igor. So the only shiloh they had, the question they had, they came to the rabbi and they said, we have this plaque and we're naming it Base Igor memory. It was the dog which brought this all about. It was because of this accident with the killing the dog that this ended up, their whole lives changed around and impacted the community the way it did. So the only question that they had was, is it appropriate to put on the plaque Base Igor in memory of the death of our dog Igor with the air raid siren? And they wondered, should we add that as well? But the rabbi himself he wasn't sure if it was even proper to even call the shul Base Igor, to name it after a dog. So that was the shiloh, and it was a real shiloh. So they go to Reb Zilberstein, right? And he was the one. So this is one in one of his books. So he talks about it. He talks about the idea of naming something after a dog or after an animal. He brings many different sources. Now, one of the sources he brings actually is it's a Gemara in Yuma, Tractate Yuma, where it tells a story about by one of the Amorayim. His name was Yochanan ben Torsa, right? Yochanan ben Torso, or Torsa, his name was. So what was that name? So it was based upon, the word Torsa is Aramaic for ox, an ox or a cow. So he had that name in his name. So the way he got that name was because the way the Gemara relates it, it was that when he was, Amora wasn't Jewish originally. He wasn't Jewish. And he bought a cow from a particular Jew who was very, very meticulous with Shemir Shabbos, with observing Shabbos. So this person had this cow, where he bought this cow from. And he was so meticulous with Shabbos, with observing Shabbos, that even the cow was trained not to work on Shabbos, not to do anything on Shabbos, because your animals also shouldn't work for you on Shabbos as well. So this fellow, this Jew, was, he trained his cows well and his animals well, and they weren't working on Shabbos. So he went ahead and sold this cow to the non-Jew. And then the non-Jew, he has no Shabbos. So he wanted a cow which could work 7 days a week. So this cow, every Shabbos, this cow wouldn't work. It was trained not to work on Shabbos. So he was very upset about it. So he goes back to, he's losing money. So he goes back to the Jew who sold him the cow. And he said, I want my money back here. Take your cow back. It doesn't work for me on Shabbos. So then the Jew who sold it to him, he whispers into the cow's ear. And he tells him, you can work for this fellow on Shabbos. It's okay. You belong to a non-Jew. It's okay to work on Shabbos. And the cow listened. The Gemara says, this is the story of the Gemara. So the cow listens and then everyone's happy. So the non-Jew who was astounded by this, he said he couldn't believe it. He said, if an animal which has no das, has no comprehension, no understanding of anything, listens to Shabbos and observes Shabbos, then suddenly I should keep Shabbos as well. And I should listen to the words of Hashem. And he ended up converting.
Oh my goodness. He converts
to Judaism and he becomes one of the great sages of the Gemara.
The cow converted?
So he's called Yochanan ben Torso. He took the name of the cow as the name for his name Yochanan ben Torso, because the cow was the instrument for inspiring him to become Jewish and to become the great rabbi that he became.
So he called him Yaakov ben Toro.
Torah is the same word. Shor is the Hebrew word. That's Hebrew. And the Aramaic version of that is a tof. The shin gets exchanged for a tof, so it becomes tor. So it's the same. The torso. I think that's what it says. Torso. I think that's the not torso in the stomach, but it's that. I think that's the actual. Wow. I have in my notes of it. Torsa. Right. Rabbi Yochanan ben Torso. Wow. So he says. So you see from this, right, that it's okay, and it's suddenly appropriate to name a good thing after an animal, even. Right? So that's one source. He brings other sources as well. But the other source which he brings, right, from the parasha this week, right? What's the source of the parasha? So in the parasha this week, you have the 10 plagues. Mm. Well, you have three of the 10 plagues left. The 7 plagues were last week and three more in this week's parasha. Mm. So the pasuk says marker over here. Let me just do it. Pasuk, page 346. It's Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Zion. So this is the description, right? This is where Moshe is telling Paro about the impending Makas Bechoros, the plague of the firstborn, the last plague. So this is where he's speaking. He's in the court of Paro, telling him what's going to happen. And then Pasuk Zion says that I'll go back to Pasuk Vav. It says, there's going to be a great cry in all of Mitzrayim, asher kamohu lo niyasa, that ever before never was, v'kamohu lo sosef, never will be again. It'll be a tremendous, a really, really shrieking sound, a terrible sound at the time of Makas Bechoros, the slaying of the firstborn. Next pasuk, ulachol b'nei Yisrael, but towards all the b'nei Yisrael, lo yachretz kalev l'shono. Against all of the children of Israel, no dog shall, it says in the translation, shall wet its tongue. Mm-hmm. Wetting its tongue basically means barking, right? That no dog is going to bark at the time of Makas Bechoros. There's going to be perfect silence, at least from the dogs. The dogs will remain silent. So let's see what Rashi says. Rashi says, Le'yachretz kele l'shono, oma anishu hulosh and shinun, le'yashana v'chein le'yachretz. He first explains the definition of the term, looking further down in the Rashi. He just gives the definitions. He doesn't bark. No dogs are going to bark at the time of the slaying of the firstborn. So what does that have to do with the price of tea in China? Right. The answer is because let's go find chapter 22 verse 30.
Can I guess?
No guesses allowed, because you wouldn't be able to guess this. It'd be impossible to guess. So 22:30. This is on page 432. Right, 432. Parshas Mishpatim. Pasuk says, Anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li.
What's the
pasuk? 30. Right? It says, Anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li. People of holiness, you'll be to me. Hashem is saying to the Jewish people, you're going to be a nation of holy people, of priests. Basa basada treifa lo sochelo. Any treif meat in the field, don't eat. So this is one of the commandments, don't eat treif. I mean, don't eat treif. That's part of the expression of an expression of holiness, that the foods we eat is commensurate with our holiness, to make sure that our food consumption is commensurate with the kedusha, the holiness of the Jewish people. So hence the pasuk says, basa basad the treif lo sochelo. Yeah. Meat in the field, which is treif, and treif just means it's a non-kosher, different types of non-kosher, don't eat. And here's the punchline. Give the treif to the dogs. The dogs get the treif. Give the treif meal. Now, treif is something which occurs after shechita. Technically speaking, treif is after you do the shechita, then you check the animal to see if it's whole and there's no broken organs and no internal injuries inside the animal. So then if it's, that's all okay. So then you can go ahead and then use the meat and eat the meat yourself. But if you discover after the shechita that there's an internal injury on the organs, or the animal has a broken leg, etc., you can't, that's the official word for treifa. Right, and then we colloquially apply it to all sorts of non-kosher food as well. But that's a technical definition of treifa.
You're talking about animals.
So therefore, that's why. So as a result, so now you've got this meat, you've shechted this animal, you can't eat it, right? Because it's treif. So what you do with it? You give it to the dogs, right? You give it to the dogs. So the dogs. So Chazal say, let's say if Rashi says it over here, let's take a look. And I mean, it's basa the treifa. Let's see where it says it. The kelev tashli is the second, the top of the second column. It says af hu kekel or ena ella tam lom. I'm sorry, in kein ma tam. Here it's over here, further down. The meducha kasa. The verse teaches you she ena kadosh baruch hu. This is the point, right? That a kadosh baruch hu does not take away, is not mekaper schar kol beria, does not take away the reward of any creature. Every creature gets its due reward. As it says, L'chol b'nei Yisrael lo yachutz kalev l'shono, the verse we read before, that no dogs barked at the time of Makkos Bechoros. So therefore, it was rewarded over here. It got its credit. It got its credit for being rewarded over here, right? So the this is another precedent also, that you now mark, you recognize the fact that it was that the dogs were rewarded. Rashi says, "Omer Kodesh Baruch Hu, tain tenu lo sachar, give it its reward. Give the reward to the dogs." So that's an example. That's what he brought as an example. So you see, like, this good precedent for the idea of acknowledging an animal. And the truth is, this idea of acknowledging animals, it's acknowledging inanimate objects as well. I mean, there are other examples of this also. I mean, the famous example is with Makkos Dam, with the blood, with the plague of blood and the plague of the lice. That who performed those plagues? With all the other plagues, Moshe Aaron did it. With the plague of blood and lice, it was Aaron, his brother, who struck the water, who struck the sand, because the sand and the water protected Moshe. Moshe obviously was protected by the water when he was born. He was in the basket inside the river. So it wouldn't be appropriate for him to strike the water, right? As it would be like, it would be a denial of the goodness that he received from the water. And it also wouldn't be appropriate for him to strike the sand, because he hit in the sand when he killed the Mitzri, the Egyptian. So therefore, Hashem has deliberately told him, don't you perform these makos. Have Aaron, your brother, perform them instead, because you have to show appreciation, right? You have to express your gratitude, or at least acknowledge your gratitude, your appreciation for these inanimate objects of the sand and the water, which have no das, no cognition, no volition whatsoever. But we still have to express our appreciation for everything which we receive. Everything which we receive, have to express appreciation. So the dogs also, whatever made the dogs not bark. I mean, this is all miraculous. But there's an appreciation which is expressed, and they get rewarded with the fact of treif meat being given. There's also other things the Gemara says, the Medrash says about the dogs, right? In the preparation of the parchments for tefillin and a sefer Torah. With all of the curation of the actual parchments, different chemicals are used. So the Gemara says that you're supposed to use, like, I don't know if you have to, but it's allowed to be used, the waste of dogs, dung of dogs, in the process of curating the parchments. It's also an expression of the appreciation to the dogs as well, that the dogs, you know, you know, waste is used in the production of the parchments of Tefillin and Sefer Torahs. And also, there's a whole perek of about the dog in Perek Shira. In this, you know, there's a very famous Perek Shira, the song of the animals. It was written to express the different appreciations of all of the different facets of creation, all the different animals and all the different parts of creation sing song to Hashem. Mm. So one of the inclusions there is a dog. The dog is included as one of the animals which sing songs to Hashem. But the reason for him, again, the reason given is because of the fact that they didn't bark in Mitzrayim by Makas Bacharos. Mm. So it underscores this idea of appreciating even in the animal objects. There's another example. There's actually two more examples, right? Two more examples of the same idea in this parasha and last week's parasha. So at last week's parasha was the Tzefardea, the frogs. So what was the reward? What reward did they get? So the Medrash says that when the frogs came along, they jumped everywhere. Wherever you went, they were everywhere. They were in your pants, they were in your briefcase, they were in your refrigerator, they were jumping everywhere, right? But they also jumped inside the ovens as well. At the bidding of Hashem, they jumped into ovens, into furnaces. They just went everywhere. But the Medrash says that the frogs were rewarded and acknowledged for the fact that they jumped inside the furnaces as well. By what? By not dying. Those frogs which went in and they were most nefesh to go inside the ovens, they didn't die. Now, eventually, all the other frogs died. Mm-hmm. But those frogs which jumped inside the ovens, they didn't die. They were rewarded. You know, so you get all of these examples of how these animals and creatures and objects are all being rewarded and all being appreciated, right? Teaching us this lesson of appreciating wherever our blessings come from.
What did you say that book was?
Perek Shira, the chapter of song, chapter of song, Perek Shira. So I'll give you one more, and there's one more example, right? There's another example also in the parasha as well. I'll leave that one to last. But another, just a story, which, you know, I've said this story many times before. It's a very good story about, his name was Rabbi Yisrael Gusman. He was one of the Rosh Yeshivas. He was Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Netzach Yisrael was the name of the yeshiva. He was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Ozer Grozinski. He was one of the great Gedolim of Europe and before the Holocaust. But it was a very, you know, well-known story about this Rabbi Gusman, that he had, in his yeshiva, he had a little garden outside of his yeshiva office. And he every day meticulously would water the plants inside the little garden outside. And he explained the reason is because during the war, he survived the Nazis. He was running away from the Nazis. He was running through forests. And it was because of plants that saved his life. Mm. But specifically, his knowledge of safe plants and poisonous plants. He knew which was, you know, and he learned this from his Rebbe from before the war. Somehow his Rebbe, like Rebbe Chaim Ozagrodensky and Grudzinski, understood, knew the poisonous plants, safe plants, etc. And he taught it to him before the war, before anything of this happened. And that was during the Holocaust when he was running away, you know, running through a forest, that he was able to utilize this information that saved his life. So forever, he always wanted to show his appreciation for the plants. Mm. And that's why he always went out of his way to make sure to water the plants. Mm. But it's, you know, and underscores this idea. You know, it's a sensitivity. It's a sensitivity to be attentive. It's a sensitivity to be attentive to the origins of the blessings in our lives and what people do for us, right? What people do for us and what things do for us, where we get things from. And to express that appreciation, to articulate that in some way, to show that we have this appreciation, even to the inanimate objects. Because gratitude, the fact is that gratitude is the bedrock of Yiddishkeit. Mm. Gratitude is the bedrock of Yiddishkeit, because it's only when you have appreciation when we have that mechanism, that capacity to appreciate, then we can ultimately bring it to Hashem and to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch is the source of everything. And then the natural reaction to appreciation, that what should naturally happen when you appreciate something is reciprocity. Reciprocity is the natural reaction to appreciation. If you really appreciate what he's doing for you, what she's doing for you, what this person's doing for you, the natural, the human reaction is, I want to reciprocate. I want to give back in kind. I want to give back in kind. So if reciprocation is the natural reaction to appreciation, then likewise with Hashem as well. then naturally, automatically, I want to reciprocate back to Hashem. I mean, I have nothing without Him. Everything I am is because of Hashem. No human being creates anything. Hashem created everything. We are who we are because ultimately Hashem is the origin of everything. So therefore, the natural reaction is to reciprocate. So how can I reciprocate? How can I give back to you, Hashem? Yeah, this gets into the whole city of karbanos, sacrifices. It's not for Hashem, it's for us. It's an expression of our appreciation. I want to give back, I want to give back, I want to give back. How can I give to you? So the very least, to listen to Him. The very least, to listen to His instructions. That's the very least form of reciprocity to Hashem. So that's the gratitude. So that's the importance of gratitude. That's why there's such an emphasis placed upon gratitude and appreciation. So you see this over here with these. Again, you have the frogs, right? Hashem is showing His appreciation, His acknowledgement, saving their lives. The dogs, and then also, what was the first one I said? The dog, the frogs?
The cow.
No, not the cow?
Yeah.
The bull. Yeah. Oh, that was in the story, the Gemara. But there's another example in the parasha as well of another animal that is given also an appreciation. What's the other animal which is given appreciation? Right, very good. The donkey.
The talking donkey.
Not the talking donkey, the donkey, right? The donkey because when they came out of Mitzrayim, right, the donkeys were the schleppers. The donkeys were carrying all of the possessions of the Jewish people when they came out of Mitzrayim. So for that, what is their reward? What is the appreciation? What is the acknowledgement for that? So the acknowledgement that Hashem gave to the donkeys is a very special mitzvah, a special mitzvah. They became a mitzvah called Petach Hamor. The end of the parasha is the passage about the redemption of the firstborn. So the redemption of the firstborn person, firstborn child, is well known, but there's also a mitzvah of the firstborn of an animal as well. So if a person's a farmer and has livestock, so then the firstborn of the livestock, of the cow, of the sheep, so that firstborn has to be brought as a korban, as a sacrifice in times of the Beis Hamikdash. Even today, there's still a process of redemption. You can't bring it as a korban, but the firstborn animal has kedusha, has special sanctity. And there's rules about what to do with it, and because you can't bring it as a korban, but in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, so the firstborn animal was brought as a korban, as a sacrifice. This is, this all, goes together with the whole idea of Makkos Bechor, the slaying of the firstborn, as the Egyptian firstborns were being slayed, were being killed, thereby elevated the Jewish firstborns. It was this for that. It was a switch around. Your firstborns are being diminished and brought down instead of you being the firstborn and you being the pinnacle of the world. Hashem saying to Mitzrayim, now it's going to be the Jewish people. B'ni B'chori, the whole Jewish people are called my firstborn. B'ni B'chori, that's a description of the entire Jewish people. So, but also the part of that is the mitzvah of the firstborn boy is also being sanctified, and firstborn animals, the same thing also to a firstborn donkey as well. Firstborn, the problem is with a firstborn donkey or a donkey, you can't bring a donkey as a sacrifice, right? Because donkey's not kosher. The only animals you can bring as a sacrifice are kosher animals. A donkey is not a kosher animal. Can't be. However, there's a special mitzvah still to do it. It gets sanctity. There's a whole procedure what to do with it afterwards, but you can't. It can't be brought as a korban. That's not our discussion right now, but it has sanctity. Where did it get that? Why? How can the pig didn't become a firstborn mitzvah? Why, all other animals? Why not? Why specifically the donkey? The answer is because the donkeys took all the possessions. Because when the Yidden came out of it, they schlepped. But they schlepped all the possessions, all the heavy possessions, not just their own possession, but the possessions they took from the Mitzrayim as well. They took everything. They carried everything, and therefore, the reward again for the schlepping of the donkeys. So then, they were rewarded by being given this special mitzvah of the kedusha of sanctity, becoming elevated, to become a sanctified animal. Now, so we have three animals. Right? We've got three animals so far. We've got the frogs, we've got the dog, and we've got the donkey. But let's look carefully at the difference between the three of them in terms of the reward and the appreciation. The frogs, frog kind, was not given any kind of special reward. It was only those frogs which were most nefesh inside the ovens. They gave up their lives inside the ovens. So those frogs, those frogs got saved, right? The dogs, dog kind, right? The whole of dog kind got rewarded by being having trafe meat being given to it, and then all dog kind, everyone's dogs, you know, waste is used for the production of parchments. So the whole of dog kind was rewarded, and likewise, the whole of donkey kind, the whole of donkey kind were rewarded with becoming elevated for the special mitzvah of the kedusha, the sanctity of the firstborn. So the first, so the frogs were only, you know, that was a limited reward, but for the dogs and the donkeys, it was a communal reward, right? But moreover, when you even compare the dogs to the donkeys, the dogs, so they get trafe meat. Well, that's a nice reward, right? But the poor dog is saying, listen, he's looking at the donkey and he says, listen, you know, I like a nice piece of pork or a nice piece of trafe meat, but like you're being elevated over there. You're being elevated to a level of kedusha. You know, what did you do better than me? What did you do better than me? Like, why am I not being rewarded with a more holier elevation, just being given trafe meat? So that's the question, like, what's going on over here between the different consequences and the different rewards? So this is sharing this from a combination of different sources, Rabbi Eliyahu Lopian and the Vilna Gaon and Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. I just forget who said what with the whole thing, but the answer which is given, what they all give to regarding this, is with the frogs, right? The frogs, they're only the frogs which go in, went inside the, what did they do? It's mesiras nefesh. It's self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice is a hugely important thing, sacrificing ourselves. But there's two types of self-sacrifice. There is self-sacrifice for oneself and the self-sacrifice for others, or the self-sacrifice in a private fashion and self-sacrifice for other people as well. Right, that's the frogs jumping into the ovens, doing what Hashem has told them to do. It's laudable. It's an expression. It's an example of our self-sacrifice to do what Hashem wants us to do. But the result of that is that limited reward for those frogs themselves. So that's there's a limit. But the self-sacrifice of the dogs, dogs are not barking to save Klal Yisrael. So that self-sacrifice and that giving for others is on a different level. The self-sacrifice for others is on a different level. But then there's a self-sacrifice. But then the self-sacrifice of the dog is keeping their mouth shut. Keeping their mouth shut. The dogs are being quiet. They're not saying anything. They're not doing it. So then the sources I'm quoting are seeing in this like an allusion to our self-sacrifice in our relationships with other people, about keeping our mouths shut when we shouldn't be speaking, right? That's a self-sacrifice. That's a restraint. But how often do we blurt in? And how often do we interrupt? And how often do we say things that we shouldn't be saying? Mm. How often do we, you know, insert our opinions and in our positions in places where we shouldn't be putting our positions? And how often should we be being silent and being quiet and just listening and not saying anything? Right, so this self-sacrifice has a little bit more of a broader application as well, and therefore the dogs had that greater reward. But the part which I really wanted to focus on is the schlepping of the donkeys, because this Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, he was the famous Rav of Yerushalayim in the 1920s. He said schlepping, when you schlep for other people, because the donkey schlepped, that's what earned them the elevation of becoming kaddish, of having sanctity as well. When you schlep, it's hard to really measure and compare which is better than which, but there's a little bit of a picture over here, an allusion, a hint that when you're schlepping and you're being mosa nefesh and you're schlepping for other people and doing for other people in a way which is uncomfortable, well, we don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. It's too hard for me. You know, being quiet in this present moment, you know, that's hard, but it's at least it's only for a minute. I have to just hold my mouth back, my voice back for a few seconds. But schlepping, I'm picking the person's bags up and going into the cold or going into the heat and going out of my, and stopping doing what I'm doing for the sake of this other person, to take them to the airport, to help them with this, to help with their homework, to help them with any kind of project they're involved with. Schlepping. That's very, very difficult. Very, very hard. And that kind of a serious nefesh comes with it an elevation to become kaddish, that the donkey becomes kaddish. Mm. So I was I was okay. So I'm doing the same thing this week as I did last week. Right, I said this class 5 years ago. Do you remember? You remember it?
No.
Okay. So I was I was driving to Lakewood to a chasna this week. So that was a few days ago. Sunday night there was a wedding in Lakewood. Driving this wedding, and it was snowing Sunday night. It was very, very bad weather. So, and I'm only saying this story not to pat myself on the back. I just thought it was very fortuitous. It was like an interesting story, the Hashgacha protest. So I'm driving to Lakewood on Sunday, and I was late. I left later than I wanted to because I had to have a milch before I went. And that's when the weather started getting really bad. Right, and the chuppah was called for 7 p.m. So I at least wanted to be there for the chuppah. So I'm driving. I left like takes about an hour and 15 minutes to get there. But I left at like 6 o'clock or something. And weather's getting very bad. I call someone up to find out where the wedding's holding, and he said, you know, they haven't started. Well, he was actually on the way. Actually, he was still on the way. He said, you know, the weather's really bad. It's really very terrible snow. He said, you may want to consider turning around and going back. So I'm thinking to myself, no, you know what? You know, as long as I go, you know, it'll make him happy. It'll make the family happy, right? And I thought this. I thought, you know, because I knew the family, and I said, even if I get there late, it's okay just to go for a few minutes. It'll make them happy. I'll just drive slowly. So I was thinking to myself, you know, I want to do this. I think it's the right thing to do. So I continued driving, and then I had taken this class. This topic right now, I download onto my phone before I went. I just randomly pick because I wanted to listen to something in the car. So I said, I'll listen to an old one. Maybe I'll give it in the class. So I downloaded this class. I was listening to it. And as I'm telling this person on the phone, you know, I should go. I get to this part about schlepping, right? Schlepping. But what happened in the class, I'm telling the story. So in the class back then, I said the following. I said, you know what? And the funny thing happened this morning. This is back then, right? Oh, wow. I came out of shul, out of Lazarovsky shul in the morning. Now, at that time, my son-in-law, Yosef Chaim lived upstairs from the shul back then.
Oh.
Of the shul. They were living upstairs in the shul. So as I was walking, so I was describing in the class to you all. I didn't remember it all, so don't worry. So I came out of shul, and it was snowing. It was snowing. I was describing how it was snowing, and Yosef Chaim was clearing off his car with and he had my granddaughter in his arms, and he was trying to do it. And I was in such a rush to get home to come give the class over here that I kind of wasn't really paying attention. I walked by him, and then I was thinking to myself as I was walking down the street here. I was walking home. I'm talking about schlepping. I'm going to be speaking about schlepping, how it's important to schlep for other people. How can I walk by Yosef Chaim without schlepping for him? So I turned around and I helped him. I helped him with taking off the snow of his car, and holding the baby and everything. So I felt very, and I, in the class, I said, I felt very bad. Like I quickly made up. And I was listening to this as I was driving to Lakewood, schlepping to Lakewood, right? And I thought, there I made up for a mistake. Here, I'm doing it l'chatchila. I'm doing it in the first place over here. And you know, Yosef Chaim is my son-in-law's name, and the story, and this whole message comes from Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. Right? That was his name as well. But the point is that, you know, so that's that you learn from this. Yeah, the idea, I mean, that's learning as well, right? We're learning that to schlep, and the rule for schlepping is Kedusha. It's Kedusha. However, one more thing I want to add, because sometimes when people schlep, you know what they do when they schlep? When they schlep for others? They schlep when they schlep, right? What? Sometimes people schlep when they have to schlep.
They should be doing it more.
They say, people, you know, I've got to do it. I'm going to do it for you. Like, but in the back of my mind, I don't want to do this. You know, I'm going to go out of my comfort zone. I'm going to go the extra mile. I'm going to schlep for you, right? But, you know, in my heart of hearts, I have no enthusiasm for this, right? I'm not enthusiastic about it. So we learn the antidote for that as well in the parasha, right? What's the antidote for that in the parasha? So that is in Pasuk, that's in Perek 12, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk. Pasuk Yud Zion, very famous Pasuk. A lot of halachas come out of this pasuk. Ushamartim esematos. He says, Hashem says to Moshe, to tell the Jewish people, Shemartim es matzos, watch over, guard over the matzos, the matzah. This is the source for Shmura matzah. The expression Shmura matzah is from this pasuk here. Shmura matzah basically means that the flour was watched over, was supervised from the time of, actually minimally, from the time of the grinding of the wheat. There's a chumrah, there's this extra stringency to make sure that it's also shemura, it's also watched over and supervised from the time of harvesting as well. So this goes into all the halachas of Pesach and making sure that the flour doesn't become chametz thick. But that's what the pasuk says: shmartim es matzos, supervise the matzos in the production of the matzos to make sure that no moisture, no water, no liquid gets inside the flour. To turn the flour and the dough into chametz, so that's what the pasuk says. However, Rashi quotes the Chazal, very famous, very very famous, that says, and this if you're looking in the it's in the bottom of the first column, the second to last line of the first column, the end of the line, Rabbi Yoshia used to say. Al tihikore es a matzos. Don't read the verse as matzos, matzah. Ella es a mitzvos. Read it as mitzvos. Because the word matzos, without the vowelation, can be read as either matzos or mitzvos. Go both ways. So he says, don't read it as matzos, read it as mitzvos. Such that, kederach she'en machmitzim es a matzos, in the same way that you can't make the matzahs, chometz, you shouldn't make the matzahs into chometz, kach ein mach mitzvah es a mitzvah. So also, you shouldn't make mitzvahs into chometz. Don't make your mitzvah, don't turn a mitzvah into a piece of chometz. What does that mean? Don't turn a mitzvah into a piece of chometz. Like, don't turn your mitzvah into a piece of ham. What does that mean? Like, what does that mean? Don't make your mitzvah into a piece of chametz. Rather, so he explains, Ella imbas yodocha, because what it means is this: if a mitzvah comes to your hand, aseu socha miyad, do it right away. Meaning to say, so not that don't make it into a piece of chametz, but rather don't approach it like it's chametz.
Like
it's sure. Don't approach it like it's chametz in terms of the delay in doing it.
Yeah.
The delay in doing it, because chametz bears that characteristic of it's taking time to do. Like you're doing it, it takes time. That's what makes it into chametz. So don't approach a mitzvah it's a piece of chametz in the sense that you have plenty of time to do it.
Mm.
Right? You shouldn't do it that way. Right? Rather, if a mitzvah comes to your hand, don't delay in doing it. Do it right away. Do it right away. Gemara says also, zrizim makdim le mitzvahs, those who have alacrity, they're very quick to do mitzvahs right away. But the message is, do mitzvahs right away. So already you see, don't schlep around when you have a mitzvah. Don't delay in doing a mitzvah. Don't delay in doing a mitzvah. So when you're doing a mitzvah, when you're schlepping, don't schlep. When you're doing it in terms of the delay and the lack of desire, but speaking more to what you just said a second ago, there is a dimension to that as well what was the word you used? Not to make it
a chore,
right? See, there's delaying in doing the mitzvah, and then there's also a chore dimension. So this is something which comes out of a Pachad Yitzchak from Rav Hutna. So he says he's medayek, right? He's very precise in the word chametz. Don't make your mitzvah. So I said before, don't make your mitzvah into a piece of chametz. That doesn't make any sense. So what it means is don't delay, like don't approach it like it's chametz and by delaying and doing. But you can actually appreciate it even on that first level of don't make the mitzvah into a piece of chametz. Because what is chametz, right? What does chametz represent? It represents
arrogance.
It represents all of these yetzahara. It represents physicality, right? It represents the physical. It's the antithesis of spirituality. It's the antithesis of mitzvahs. It's the antithesis of ruchnius, of kedusha. It's the antithesis. That's the symbol of physicality, pure physicality. So he points out. He says that in the realm of physicality also is time. time is also in the realm of physicality. Mm-hmm. Time is also a physical phenomenon. How do we know that? Well, you know, nowadays we all know that because of Einstein, because he proved that mass and time are related to each other. So really, so time is an outgrowth and a product of the physical universe. But we didn't need Einstein for this. We knew it all the time, right? Because the Vilna Gaon said it as well. He pointed out in the blessing we say at the beginning of davening, in Baruch Sha'amar, the opening blessing of Pesukei de Zimra. So it says, Baruch Sha'amar v'hoya ha'olam, blessed is Hashem who created, who said, who spoke, and the world came into being. Baruch Osa Bereshis, blessed is the one who makes Bereshis, who makes the beginning, who did make the beginning. Blessed is the one who made the beginning. What does that mean? The Vilna Gaon says, who made time. He made the beginning.
You promised us no physics.
So he made time. He made time. But blessed is the one who made time, who started time in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So he created time. Time is also a creation. Mm-hmm. It's all part of the physical universe, which he created, time. So time is created. So when a person's really... When we try to be more attuned and more sensitive to our neshama, the neshama really has like almost an aversion intrinsically to the physical and to itself, right? The neshama doesn't really want to. We are here. The neshama doesn't really want to be here. The neshama is really in a spirit, but we are here. We have to perform. We have to act. We have to behave. We have to do what we need to do by being here. But the neshama doesn't really. Intrinsically, the neshama has an aversion to all things physical. Intrinsically, right? So we're commanded now to take the physical, to elevate the physical. But really, intrinsically, the neshama has an aversion to all things physical. So it has an aversion to all things. So therefore, the neshama, deep down inside the neshama doesn't really doesn't want time to interfere, because time is also physical. The neshama doesn't like time. The neshama wants to connect to beyond time. So therefore, if a person does a mitzvah, when a person does a mitzvah with delay, meaning to when he delays and schleps himself and is slow in approaching the mitzvah, so what is he doing? He's really showing that time is a factor. Time's a factor. Time is the antithesis of the neshama. So therefore, that itself, that's treif. That is treif. If I'm doing a mitzvah slowly and schlepping around, getting around to doing it, Then I've turned the mitzvah into a piece of chometz. Yeah. I've turned it into a piece of chometz because a chometz is physical. It's this worldly. It's earthly. It's the antithesis of spirituality. That's what chometz is. So if I'm doing it with delay and I'm not tapping in, connecting to the ruchnius of the mitzvah, then I'm making it into a physical chore. Yeah. It's a physical chore. That's what it is. So therefore, right? Therefore, do mitzvahs right away. Do it right away. Do them right away to show that you want to connect to the ruchnius of the mitzvah and not to the external shell, the physicality of the mitzvah. I want to connect to the neshama of the mitzvah, and therefore it's not a hot piece of chometz. It's actually a piece of matzah at that point now. Mitzvah is matzah, same thing. So therefore, as we learn from the donkey to schlep, right? We shouldn't schlep as we're schlepping. We should schlep with alacrity, right? That's what we should do.